Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for November 25th, 2008. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. In this episode, we'll discuss a paper published in this week's issue of Science Signaling by Kai Zurhove and colleagues, in which the authors report that a lipoprotein receptor-like protein functions to negatively regulate the inflammatory response initiated by bacterial infection. Petra May, the paper's senior author, spoke with me from the University of Freiburg about the work. Dr. May, thank you for speaking with me today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Your paper is about how the inflammatory response to infection is regulated. Can you tell us just a little bit about the immune system and inflammation?
For the organism as a whole, it's very important to have some defense mechanisms against injury in a broad sense. So not only against infection, but also mechanical injury, for example, or chemical injury. And also the defense must be fast, able to react even to previously unknown damage because it's not foreseeable for the organism what might happen to it. And so there's one branch of the immune system which can do that. It can react fast and without previously knowing the damaging agent. So this is the so-called branch of innate immunity. Innate because the immune system doesn't have to learn in order to be able to react. And this response, if you now try to apply it to defense against bacteria, recognizes certain patterns, molecular patterns of these organisms, which are different from eukaryotic cells, but sufficiently similar between different sets of bacteria that they can be recognized immediately. There's also another branch of the immune system, which is called the adaptive immune response, which depends on getting to know the damaging agent. So it needs some time to evolve, but has the advantage of being very specific and then very powerful.
So that's the type of immunity that's activated when one gets a vaccination, for example.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about innate immunity, which is that initial rapid response to a pathogen invading the body.
That's right. Yeah, this is the branch of the immune system we were actually concerned with in the study you mentioned.
One of the things that the innate immune system does is activate an inflammatory response?
Yeah, that's right. So you could define the inflammatory response as any kind of mechanism that the body employs to restore homeostasis or to get rid of damaging agents of bacteria or to restore mechanical or other type of tissue damage. And what happens is that somehow, in the case of bacteria, as I described, the invasion or the damage is recognized, in this case, by the typical molecular components I mentioned, which are recognized by the cells and also the other components of the innate immune system, which activate defense mechanisms.
So inflammation is one way that the immune system responds to an invading bacterium. Is it harmful if the inflammatory response is allowed to go on?
Yeah, this can be really harmful. The inflammatory response is quite powerful, and in its course, mediators of enzymes are released, which are also able to destruct normal tissue. And there's great potential propagation of the response because inflammatory cells release mediators which attract more inflammatory cells and also make the small blood vessels more leaky, which leads to influx of fluid into the tissue. And if all this goes on uncontrolled, normal tissue will be harmed very much. So it is really important that the immune response can be constrained.
Your research addresses how the duration of the inflammatory response can be controlled. Can you tell us where you started with your research?
It all started with research on the lipoprotein receptor LRP1. This is a receptor from the family of LDL receptor-related lipoprotein receptors, and they were previously regarded as anacytic receptors, which means receptors that take up cargo from outside the cell into the cell. And some time ago when I was doing a postdoc in Joachim Herz's lab at the UT Southwestern Medical Center at Dallas, Texas, it was just found out by his lab, really, that these receptors have different roles, that they can act as signaling receptors. For LRP1, for example, it was shown that its intracellular domain, the part within the cell, interacts with signaling molecules. And also they had examined LRP1 knockout mice and had found that they had surprising phenotypes that could not be explained by the role in endocytosis. So the question really was, how can LRP1 transmit signals or modulate signaling pathways? And what was found out was that LRP1 can undergo a proteolytic processing like other membrane receptors. At that time, really Notch was the great example. So what we noticed is that the synthesis and processing of LRP1 and Notch are similar. they are both cleaved after synthesis by a protease called furin, then go to the membrane as heterodimers, and they can shed the extracellular domain after cleavage by metalloproteases. And for NORD, it was already very well studied that this shedding was followed by another cleavage step by the so-called gamma secretase enzyme that released the intracellular domain of the receptor into the cytoplasm. And in the case of NORD, it then translocates to the nucleus and acts as a transcription factor. And as I say, it was very well studied for this receptor signaling pathway, which really leads to direct transcriptional regulation by a transmembrane receptor.
Does LRP undergo this final type of cleavage like NOTCH then?
Yes, it does. That was what he was able to show back then, that indeed it is also cleaved by gamma secretase and that its intracellular domain is released from the plasma membrane. But what we didn't find out at the time, or what remained unclear, was what the physiological role of the LRP ICD would be and what it really would do after release from the membrane. And so that's what we set out to start back here in Freiburg when I came here. We really first had in mind the question of whether the LRP1 intracellular domain would also be able to translocate to the nucleus and act like a transcription factor, similar to what was known about NOTCH.
And does it?
Yes, that's what we find out in the current study, that it really translocates to the nucleus and that it can modulate transcription. And it does so by interacting with another transcription factor, IRF1.
Do you know what induces cleavage of LRP1 by the gamma secretase?
So in the original study, we had found out that phobol esters as pharmacological agents could induce LRP1 processing and cleavage by gamma secretase. And this was quite interesting because they also provoke an inflammatory response in different cells and tissues. That's well known. And we had already in mind whether LRP1 cleavage could play a role during the inflammatory response. And so we tested another reagent, bacterial lipopolysaccharide, because this is really of physiological importance during bacterial invasion of the body, for example, because this is a component of the bacteria's cell wall that is released when bacteria infect the body and which really activates the inflammatory response. And so we found that also LPS, lipopolysaccharide, could activate LRP1 processing and lead to the increased release of the LRP1 intracellular domain.
Gamma secretase inhibitors are a class of drugs that are being investigated for maybe being used to treat Alzheimer's disease. Does your work have any implications for the potential use of those sorts of drugs?
So it certainly makes you think about potential side effects, which you have to consider, because our study shows that LRP1 plays a role in negatively regulating the inflammatory response on transcriptional level. So what we could show is that LPS-induced release of the LRP intracellular domain leads to inhibition of transcription of LPS-induced inflammatory genes. So if you lose this feedback mechanism, you would predict an enhanced inflammatory response due to enhanced transcription of inflammatory genes.
So potentially inhibiting gamma secretase could disrupt this loop and then disable the system that allows the inflammatory response to be shut down?
Yeah, this is at least something you have to bear in mind because it is a danger, of course, especially in the brain. Recent studies have shown that there's an inflammatory component to Alzheimer's disease. If this is aggravated, it might, of course, cause damage and turn out to be a side effect of the use of gamma secretase inhibitors, which is unwanted.
In addition to the implications that your work has for the potential use of gamma secretase inhibitors in treating patients, how else did your work inform you about the function of LRP1?
So what was very important for us in the results was to find out what really the gamma secretase mediated cleavage of LRP1 means, or what its role is in the organism, and what the function of the free LRP1 intracellular domain is, because this was completely unknown when we started the study. And not only was it unknown for LRP1, also for many other receptors, which in recent times have been found out to be cleaved by gamma secretase, yeah, for many of them, still the function of the ICDs is unclear. So that some people even have suggested gamma secretase is just a kind of cleanup mechanism to keep the membrane clean, to get rid of proteins that are no longer needed. And so we thought there must be a function to the release of the ICD if such a regulated mechanism occurs. And so what we learned from this study is that the ICD really can translocate to the nucleus and function as a transcriptional regulator, in this case by interacting with another transcription factor, IRF3. this signaling mechanism, which we think is really interesting and important. On the one hand, because it provides really new interesting information about LRP1, and on the other hand, because it also provides information on the role of gamma secretase cleavage of proteins in general, because it shows that this process actually gives relevant information to the cell rather than just cleaning up the membrane and getting rid of proteins that are no longer needed.
Thank you, Dr. May, for talking with me today.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about our work.
Petra May is senior author on a paper published in the November 25th issue of Science Signaling. That wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, the Science Society. Our producer is Robert Frederick. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for joining us.